This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
G'day, it's Dean from the team at Hide and Seek. Now, we know how much you love the show, but it's time for you to tell the boss and the rest of the world how much you love the program. To let the boss know how much you love Hide and Seek, head to joy.org.au and complete our annual listener survey. It'll only take a few minutes of your time and it'll do the world of good for us. To let the rest of the world know, if you're listening via iTunes or via Stitcher, be sure to give us a 5-star rating, and in doing that, it'll help others find out about the program. Thank you very much for your support over the last 7 years, and with your continued support, Hide and Seek will be here for many years to come.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
Feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome.
Get ready for the ride.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. You're with myself, Tim Little. I'm also joined by
me, Ben.
Hi, Ben. Welcome again.
Welcome. It's great to be back.
And we've got Matt as well.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
We have a packed studio tonight.
It's hot in here, and our five guests haven't got in the studio yet as it is. So
I know. I need to take off some layers, I think. Well, how have you guys been?
I've been good.
In the past week, great. I'm gearing up for tonight, to be honest. I'm ready.
I'm very excited. Little bit stressed this week with the whole plebiscite.
Of course, yeah. It's kind of come to a head this week, hasn't it?
It has, and we're going to talk about that in our news theme. A little bit later on, though, slut-shaming and sex-shaming, it is rife in our community. We're going to have a chat to some community members tonight here in the studio. As we said, we've got heaps to come for you here at Hide and Seek.
Have your say. SMS 0427 Joy 949.
Email on air at joy.org.au.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. I'm Tim Little and I'm joined by Ben Broadley and Matthew Wade.
How's it going?
Yo.
Very well, and we have a packed studio here tonight. Everyone, come forward. Yeah, we want to have a chat to you.
Snuggle up over here.
Come and snuggle up. So we've got Steve Spencer, prep advocate and community advocate.
Hello, you missed out the Melbourne's Best Bottom bit.
Oh, and Melbourne's Best Bottom. Yeah, I forgot but that one. We've also got Brandon Cook, who's a writer for Same Same and wrote a great article, What's Got Us So Worked Up About Sex.
That's the one.
We've also got Darby, who's learning here at Joy 94.9, and he's also a go-go dancer extraordinaire.
Oh, you know, I'm loving that.
And we've got Ash Unicum, entertainer and member of the local sporting community.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome, everybody.
You know what? It feels like in here tonight, kind of like, you know, on morning breakfast news when they have like Koshy's Angels, and you could be like Gretel Colleen, and you could be Magda, and if you're racist, you're Sonia Kruger.
Can I be Magda?
Yep. That's it.
Definitely. And
shame.
I don't know, some of you may have seen Game of Thrones and this scene where Cersei is forced to run the gauntlet.
Shame. Shame.
Amid lots and lots of ridicule.
Not good.
And this kind of thing happens in the gay community, doesn't it, guys?
That's just people through the club, really, let's be honest.
That's where they got the idea for that, actually.
I wrote them an email. It's great.
Now, Brandon, you wrote a great article, as we said before, called What Do We Have to Be Ashamed Of? What's Got Us So Worked Up About Sex?
Ah, thanks.
So let's explore some of the issues in this one.
Yes. I wrote that about a month ago, mid-August, so feel free to read it back to me.
What was the inspiration? Were you just like, enough is enough? Was there sort of a turning point?
Yeah, I just kind of got to thinking about, you know, stuff I'd experienced in the community as a sexually active gay man, because we don't have enough of those going around, and just sort of, you know, thought about where this stigma towards other gay men and the kind of stigma we throw at each other might actually come from, and just sort of thinking about, you know, gay history and that sort of thing, and it kind of got an article that turned out from it. So
there was an interesting line in there that I read about the AIDS epidemic, and
yes,
your point was, we're living in what some might call the shadow of the AIDS crisis. An entire generation of young gay men have grown up with horror stories from their forefathers detailing a time, one that wasn't so long ago.
Yes, that I love. I don't love that phrase, but I definitely throw that phrase around a lot, the shadow of the AIDS crisis. Yeah. I do feel like, because I was born in 1992, so I'm quite young, and I feel like there are a lot of people who were born or grew up or were very young during the time when the AIDS crisis was at its peak and sort of came about, grew up when it was sort of edging off and that sort of thing. And they grew up with a lot of sexual health and, you know, STI prevention messages that were going around and really quite strongly directed at gay men, and not just the kind that we're seeing, you know, being sent towards straight people. Like, you know, many people would say that the sexual health prevention messages targeted towards gay men are so much stronger than they are targeted towards straight people. And, you know, they're kind of growing up with these stories going back of just, you know, disease, people dying, that sort of thing. And the way that it really kind of takes a toll on you psychologically, like, has been quite strong. And I know that I've personally faced it. Like, for a long time, I couldn't be intimate with someone without thinking about their status and if they knew their status and did I know my status and were we going to use condoms, that sort of thing. And, you know, it makes it very hard to be intimate with someone. And if you don't know someone's status and if you aren't really aware of that sort of thing and if you're thinking about that all the time, the person you're with doesn't really, you know, they're no longer someone you're intimate with. They kind of become an enemy in a way. Like, you can't fully be intimate with them. And I feel like that has really played a role in how we treat each other when it comes to slut shame and that sort of thing and sex negativity, because all those messages we're sent start to be internalized. And, you know, people that are openly sexual and proud of their sexuality and open about that, they generally get targeted for abuse. More like, I'm not going to say more than straight people. I haven't been straight. I don't know what that's like. But yeah, like, definitely a lot more and a lot more vicious, because everyone's got this fear in the back of their mind. Everyone's living in the shadow of this massive thing that happened to all of us, like, and affects all of us sitting in this room and even, you know, a lot of people listening right now. And you just, it's all about unraveling that fear and the shadow and stepping out of the shadow and being like, it's okay now, we can do this, and we don't need to target each other so heavily just because we do stuff that other people might disagree with, that, no, you know, conflicts with that.
Of course. And you mentioned an interesting term before, sex negativity, I guess. For our listeners who may not be aware or may not be part of the community, or gay men in particular, how, in what ways does that manifest, like that kind of slut-shaming or that stigma? Like, how do we face that as a community? In what ways does it, yeah, come about?
In what ways is sex negativity?
Yeah, or slut shaming.
Sex
yeah.
negativity yep. come about? Jesus, this is why I write. I can't talk very well. I guess, like, for example, I remember I was standing outside of a club one night because I shoot at this, I'm a photographer as well, and I shoot at this monthly gay night called Closet. And I was standing outside, and there's a gay sauna around the corner, which, Mum, if you're listening, I've never been to, wouldn't dream of, but everyone else, absolutely. And there was a guy standing outside, and he was like, oh, like, because I think at one night or maybe one early morning, I must have been sitting in the foyer, like having a coffee or something, because night shift, you know, you got to stay awake before the trains start. And someone's like, oh, like, I went in there to buy some amyl or something, and I saw you sitting there. Just inside, only you were actually going there. And he said it in such a way, like he almost spat it at me as I'm standing outside. And it was the way he said it and the way he talked about it. And like, these are places that gay guys can go to have a good time and to be intimate with other people and get that release. And a lot of people still feel like they can't do that in their everyday lives. Like, they need these places. And this guy was sort of volatile and saying to me like, oh, you were actually there. And it's stuff like that. And, you know, even growing up, being like really young, being 18 years old, which is, you know, 6 years ago now. And if you talk about being intimate with someone, it would just earn you this look from some people of just like, oh, like, you're talking about this, this is really happening, like, oh, why would you say that you're doing that? And maybe that was just immaturity, because obviously that was a long time ago. But it's just, you know, there's a lot of sass, I'd say, that goes around. Like, I haven't experienced too much serious vitriol in recent times, but, yeah, just a lot of shade.
And would you say it's internalised homophobia? Would you go that far?
I actually would. I really would say that. Only because, you know, we talk about the shadow of the AIDS crisis and that sort of thing. There are, and there have been books written about this by prominent psychotherapists, like The Velvet Rage, which maybe some people have read, which talk about people's internalised sense of shame and gay men's internalised sense of shame from growing up in a culture of stigma and hatred towards, you know, people directing hatred towards them, and that leads people towards having feelings of hatred and shame towards themselves, and that can really manifest in projecting on other people. So I think there are a lot of people who, when they say things like that, or when they do spit venom like that outside of nightclubs at very fragile young photographers, it can probably be a sense of internalized homophobia and just an inability to embrace your sex, and by virtue, you know, maybe still, even if you are open enough to go to a gay club, some element of your sexuality as well.
Yeah, it's so true. And I find as well, like, what you do sexually, your sexual adventures are not okay, but mine are. Like, exactly. So this guy's, he knows where the sauna is. He knows to go there to buy amyl, but because you're, you know, you're there, that's wrong. It's just, it's crazy.
I'm like, somehow I'm the bad one. Like, why is my sex life any of your business? You know, and like, my mum calls me a sex columnist. She doesn't read my work. I don't know why she says that. Mum, don't say that. Please don't say that. Stop saying that. It's really weird. And like, you know, and I get a bit of judgment thrown to me about that because I write about gay saunas. And I write, like, one of my most recent articles was about going to a naked gay bar. And I'm just, you know, like, that's bad, apparently. And I don't know why, because this is stuff that we do. Like, calm it down now.
Do you think as well a lot of it may actually stem from your parents, not yours specifically,
probably,
but from the way that you're brought up, largely because it's a total different world for them? Like, the whole idea of men going to a club to have sex with men is just completely foreign.
Oh, my God, yes. I've had conversations with not only my straight friends, even my family members, because, you know, like, I've written a lot about this, and occasionally my family will read it, and they will stop me, and they'll sit me down as though we're having an intervention of some kind and be like, so tell me about these saunas, and I don't understand. And there really is just a lack of understanding. And I think that, you know, would really come from they don't understand the necessity for it. And, like, I understand the historical context about sex on premises venues and stuff like that, and the necessity that these places had and the utility they had for a lot of closeted gay men in the past, and how, you know, I can't take someone home with me because one of my housemates finds out and that sort of thing, so I have to go here and do that, and that's how I enjoy myself. But they don't. It's like they're starting from square one. They have no concept, and I have to sit there and explain this over and over again. And I guess, in a way, when I am writing, I do feel like I need to start from scratch with a lot of people, which is why I don't go into too many academic terms. I say, this is what it is, and this this is why it exists, and try and be very simple, because when I share the content and when the content gets shared on the social media pages, people are reading it who have probably never heard these things before and have never been to these places. And you really have to tell them from scratch what it's all about so they can understand it and get that understanding, because otherwise it's just ridiculous to them and really strange, because they don't need that apparently. So, yeah.
And you also mentioned earlier, you know, we were talking about the AIDS crisis. Now we have PrEP.
Yes.
And Steve, I know you've definitely been part of these conversations specifically around PrEP. And I myself have actually suffered what you would call slut shaming, where you say, I'm on PrEP, and they go, well, you must be promiscuous.
Totally. And like, the place where slut shaming with regards to PrEP use, it comes from sort of multiple areas. You know, there are a lot of similarities that it has with the same similar stigma that people living with HIV have to encounter every day of their lives, that they're HIV positive. And so in that way, we, you know, it's actually quite great. We've got a whole group of people that we can learn really valuable lessons from. But then when it comes to more complicated areas of slut shaming in particular, it, you know, it so often just comes down to misinformation and a misunderstanding of what it really is. And, you know, that could be a testament to the lack of movement by the sector on educating people. You know, we've certainly been far behind in, you know, getting it on the PBS and TGA approved. So certainly community understanding of it, you know, it's not surprising that perhaps it's a little bit behind. But, you know, slut shaming, in my opinion, really just comes down to bullying. And the best way to deal with your bullies is to take away their ammunition. And the best way to arm yourself in to fire back with your own ammunition is to arm back with facts. Mm. And PrEP speaks for itself.
Yeah.
It's really quite amazing, is that you don't have to use any hyperbole. You don't have to make up anything. You really just have to go, you know what? It is actually fantastic. And like something that I really like to talk about, you know, the term responsible or irresponsibility is always brought up when it comes to PrEP. And I like to throw out one statistic. The average gay, national gay testing average is 1.5 or 6 times a year. You can check the gay periodic survey for that. For PrEP users, it's 4 times a year. And so, you know, we're the responsible ones. We're really taking charge. And, you know, when you show people, not only through facts, but also by your own actions, you can really fight back against any stigma facing you as a PrEP user.
Such a good point. And, you know, I've even seen, like, people on Grindr saying, no PrEP, poofters, or something like that. And, yeah, a great opportunity to sort of, like, I wish it was like an instant block, of course, but, yeah, that's a point where you really need to say, hey,
totally,
you're wrong. And, like,
totally.
These and are then, the facts, yeah.
And, like, they're real, like, health outcomes here. Like, there are probably people who might feel too ashamed to go on PrEP when they really need that. These are the people that really need to go on it. So we need to remove the stigma and the slut shaming around that.
Absolutely.
This is Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. You're with myself, Tim Little. We're also joined by Ben Broadley and Matt Wade tonight, and a bunch of guys here in the studio all talking about slut shaming. And thanks to Stephen for your message. Hey guys, fascinating show. Great to hear from the younger generation on sex. And speaking of sex, we've got Ash Unicum. Entertainer, wow, extraordinaire.
Welcome. Not the first time I've been introduced like that.
It won't be the last either.
So we've been talking about slut shaming tonight, or sex negativity, if you like. What have been your experiences in dealing with that?
Well, I mean, my perspective is slightly different to what's been mentioned so far. And that's, you know, around the issue of shame itself. And I feel, you know, slut shaming, really, you know, the word that sticks out to me is shame, because the word slut to me, you know, that's, I'm a slut, it doesn't bother me. So the shame, I feel like slut shaming is really removed if you don't feel shame in what you're doing. So for me, if you're being slut shamed, it's more about the fact that you need to look at why you feel shame in your activity and assess what you're doing. You know, like, it's, and then reevaluate what you're doing. And if you don't feel comfortable with that, then you need to assess what you're doing and say, well, maybe I don't want to be treated like that. Maybe I don't want to do what I'm doing. Or you say, hey, I'm okay with who I am. And you step up to that, and you know, and that's where what Steve was saying before about, you know, removing the power from bullies and saying, you know, like, this is who I am, and you know, you take that power away from them.
But those bullies, I guess, like, and gay men in particular, who do slut shame others, what do you think it stems from? Because I find it kind of ironic that as queer men or as gay men, you know, we by and large, in comparison to our heterosexual counterparts, are a lot more sexually liberated and we have a lot more freedom when it comes to exploring sex. So why do you think that, in light of that, there are gay men who still shame others for exploring such sex?
I mean, there's definitely a raft of reasons, but I think a huge part of it stems from jealousy in a way. And whether that's, you know, they're jealous they're not getting as much, or the, you know, more likely they're jealous that they're not as comfortable with who they are. And I think that's a huge part of it.
Or somebody's going to steal your boyfriend.
Yeah. Which, you know, happens to everyone, let's be honest.
So the Melbourne Gay Community Periodic Survey, that provides a snapshot of what gay Melbourne's men's sex and relationships look like in 2016. And they said that 32% are in open relationships. So if 32% are in open relationships, and it is actually the highest category, why is it that this is such a shame for people?
It's interesting because, like, that statistic would indicate that a lot of gay men aren't open relationships. But I can remember actually writing about this for Star Observer, and when we posted it, a lot of men were commenting underneath saying, that's not representative of the community, like, I wouldn't do that. So it's kind of interesting how that indicates there are a lot of men that are obviously sexually a lot more fluid or in terms of how they, their lifestyles and relationships, but the people who aren't can still be really, like, you know, firm in their opposition to it or their shaming of it, I guess.
And 48% of men have met other men on mobile apps like Grindr or Scruff. Now, I don't know about you, but who goes on Grindr or Scruff to have a nice picnic or something like that?
48%.
Wow. 48%.
That's a big number.
I find that really small. I would say 98% of the guys I've had sex with I've met on Grindr or Scruff.
So you're saying there's a lot of people ashamed of actually admitting that?
Yeah, that sounds like it. I mean, you know, obvious. I can only speak for the people I spend time with and, you know, my friends and my peers. But everybody I know uses the app, so...
It goes along with that whole thing of people having on their profiles willing to lie about how we met.
Wow.
I'm like, I'm going to tell my mother I met you on Grindr. Like, I don't care.
But then again, I've also, like... limited who I see in my grid to, you know, people over the age of 45. So, like, I don't get the people who are young and shamed. Yeah.
And daddies. Do you think it's prevalent on social media? Darby, have you noticed that sort of thing on Facebook and other apps like that?
Oh, my Lord. I'm a bit of a social media person, one could say. And I get a lot of the clap back on... on slut
shaming. Clap also once or twice.
Aww.
Sorry.
That was a really poor pun. Like, come on.
Couldn't help myself.
It's like people feel entitled to an opinion when they're on social media, and whether it's an opinion about someone's sex life, then they feel more comfortable doing that online because they don't have to have that face-to-face interaction. Like, I had an interaction the other week where someone went through my whole profile and wrote on it that I was... it was related to me being on PrEP and me being outwards about my use of that and promoting it to people, saying that, like, I was going around giving people HIV and that this person who I'd never met before in my life had an interaction with me that had ended in him contracting HIV. Oh. So,
whoa.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that, like, and that's the most recent example. Like, I wish I could say that was the only time that's ever happened, but that happens weekly.
But as, like,
slander, can I just say?
Oh, 100% it is slander.
As Steve was saying, that's a form of bullying.
Yeah.
Really.
100%. And, like, that kind of thing happens in, like, there's these tiny throwaway comments that I'm sure all the other boys have had on the bottom of their articles and on profiles and that kind of thing. But, you know, it seems to have a more prevalent place in social media.
And, you know, when we talk about the term slut-shaming, I mean, initially it was devised because women were feeling slut-shamed because of how they expressed themselves. But it seems to be quite prevalent in the gay community as well. Steve's putting his hand up.
Hello.
We have a great system here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I see so much of slut-shaming as being really sort of a heteronormative ideal, in that it stems from the pure and the virginal as best and the dirty and the used as wrong. And, you know, we can see that in things like I'm constantly getting slut-shamed for being into, I don't know, many broad...
types wide. Of sex.
Yeah, exactly. Wide is one word you could use. And I sort of think, oh, what's this fascination with a tight butt? And it's like, it goes back to the virginal thing. And it's like, come on, we're gay men, we're liberated from that system. Like, yeah. Let's get rid of slut shaming.
But like, do you reckon that sort of the slut shaming that's going on in the gay male community is because we're trying to have that like 70s women's lib sexual movement? Like, do you think we're trying to go through that and become more open? Like,
I think it's the opposite. I think it's the slut shamers are wanting to go back to being 1950s white men, in that, yeah. Oh, they're trying to be part of the, you know, that they're trying to be heteronormative.
And I would say also it's a way, like, for many people who do slut shame it, and I shouldn't generalize, but it could be like what you're just saying. It's a way to kind of be seen as more acceptable members of the community and accepted by the heterosexual community. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't doubt that, you know, slut-shaming definitely does exist, but I think it's become a lot more prevalent because people are giving voice to it a lot more, and people are taking it on board, and, you know, because people are, you know, a lot more sexually active, I think, in the, you know, especially of, you know, when I was 18, 19, I'd, you know, only just sort of found the internet, and so my idea of what sex was, I still had to go out and explore, but I think, you know, people... you know, that are younger than me are much more lucky in the sense that, you know, by the time that they're sexually active, they sort of have more of an idea of what they want and what they're about. And so they get to experience a lot more.
As someone who is much younger than Ash, I've had the internet my entire life. Like, there has always been Grindr. It's been around since I was like 8. And all these things have been around my entire gay life. So... like, whilst I can read articles and see the place of sex on premises venues and that kind of thing, I can't think of the time when cruising was the only thing. Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, for me, I find, I do use the apps quite a lot, but I find, you know, cruise lounges and saunas and things, they're just a lot more convenient. You know, you don't have to clean up afterwards, all of that sort of stuff. But it's, you know, it's, and there's... you can meet someone there, and then there's like 8 other guys afterwards. It's great.
And here's another hand.
Sorry, need more mics. You know, I was going to say about the cleanup, well, not the cleanup exactly, but the sex on premises convenience thing. I actually photograph a lot of sex workers. I'm a photographer as well. And there's a lot of debate between heterosexual female on male sex workers and gay male sex workers. And the gay male sex industry is actually a lot less going on in it than heterosexual sex industry, because apparently gay men, they can just pay $25 to go to a sauna and have it off with people in privacy than pay someone $250 for an hour and that sort of thing.
So, yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. I was going to make a point on that. I can't really remember.
Flabbergasted you.
$25 is exorbitant, if you ask me, but...
For over 25 years, the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives have been collecting and preserving Australia's queer history. A not-for-profit organisation, the Archives rely on your support through membership, financial and queer memorabilia donations. To find out more, email algarchives@hotmail.com or web search the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. And tonight we are talking about slut-shaming. Of course, myself, Tim Little, Ben Broadley and Matt Wade tonight. And we are joined by a swaft of guests
here. A gaggle
here.
Of gays.
A nice full house, yeah.
A gaggle of gays. Minogue of gays.
Love that one. Now, Brandon, you discussed the idea of chemsex in your article. And the relationship between that and slut-shaming. Would you say that maybe chemsex is a little bit more prevalent because slut-shaming occurs?
Would I say that it's more prevalent because slut-shaming occurs?
Yeah, do you think slut-shaming causes people to engage in drug sex to lose their inhibitions so they don't feel shame?
That's a bit correlation causation. Like I understand, my understanding of it is that it does come back to a lot of stigma and inhibition that gay men feel. Like not necessarily slut shaming doesn't necessarily cause people to go out and take drugs and have sex, but a lot of the stigma that causes people to slut shame would also lead them to maybe take drugs and have sex to free themselves, feel disinhibited, and basically have what they experience as better sex.
I also think that peer pressure plays a huge part in the chemsex scene. I know of a few people who they tried it purely because the partner they were going to have sex with were like, "What? You don't do meth? Why not? You've got to try this." And so I think peer pressure is also a huge factor.
And of course, we are talking about people's experiences with this. We're not necessarily condoning the use of meth, just to be clear to everyone. And it's certainly an issue in the gay community that we're exploring. But I guess that the whole angle where you lose your inhibition, you stop thinking about the shame of actually having sex and being promiscuous.
And that is, that can be a very tempting thing, is to lose that shame. Because, as I said before, that's something we all grow up with as gay men, is that kind of shame and stigma. And that can be very tempting to do. Yeah.
Certainly. And Darby's got his hand up. I love this. It's like a classroom.
Well, an example that I've heard is that a friend of mine had a guy over that was actually married, had kids. The guy rocks up, opens a pouch, and had brought a pipe with him because that was the only way that he was going to feel okay about having sex with a man was... Because, he was from a very orthodox family, immigrated to Australia, all of that kind of thing. And so the only way he felt comfortable was by bringing his meth pipe with him. And so, looking at it from that sort of stigma angle, it's, interesting.
Talking about the stigma on that, because there is so much stigma around use within our community, it stops people from speaking up. And the best way to fall into addiction is by falling into it alone, rather than seeking out help and building networks and connections, because that is, that is pretty much proven to be the best way to avoid addiction. Because chemsex in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's when you start making unhealthy life decisions and decisions that really hurt yourself and those around you. I feel awful whenever I see on social media, more often than not, it's drag queens in quite a high social position making jokes about people who are using. And it's like, you have no idea if someone in your friendship group is just crying out for help and your little statement there has just scared them away and you've just pushed them into something really awful. Needs to stop. That sort of stigma needs to stop.
And that's a really good point. I saw a video and it was a guy in London and there's some conflict between saying to your friend, "Hey, I think you need to chill out for a while, take the weekend off," but saying, "Don't slut shame me, like I have the right to enjoy sex and enjoy my life," and things like that. Is this such a growing problem, you think?
So they kind of use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
I've had the experience, I personally, I don't do chems and I've played with guys that do, but I haven't enjoyed the occasion. So I've made the decision that I don't want to play with guys when they're using chems, but I'll say to them, if I'm chatting to them on the app or whatever, I'll say, "Oh, sorry, I don't PMP, but good luck with it." And I've had people get quite abusive with me for saying that I'm not interested in having sex with them whilst they're on camps. And I find that's quite an interesting sort of standpoint. It's almost like they're defiant. But I think that obviously comes from a place of, they're not particularly accepting of, what they're doing.
Yeah.
And look, if you've got a problem with chems and you actually want to get some help, VAC have a great program called Rewired. If you go to vac.org.au, I believe is the address, they have a good program where you can go and speak with other people as well. Now, we were talking earlier about the whole idea of sex clubs. And the correlation there and the fact that, you know, people go there because you can be a bit more discreet because you might feel what ashamed of what you're doing. Well, yeah, what's the word discreet?
Isn't that what leaks at? No.
I don't know how to spell it.
But, you know, people do all sorts of things in these clubs that they may not necessarily want their wife, their partner, their family to find out about.
And we're not talking about macrame, are we?
Well, you sort of have to do macrame to rim me, so...
I'm not apologizing. Hairy ass.
Brendan's really just apologizing to his mother at this point.
Yeah. I'm great because I'm real traditional, Jesus.
She knows what I'm talking about.
No. Okay. I'll let you have that one.
And Brandon, you've certainly written a bit about this in your article as well.
Yes, I have. What about gay saunas? And
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what, in terms of people wanting to be discreet and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, the sexual privacy aspect for a lot of gay men still applies. Like, I can't count the number of gay men I've met at gay bars and at gay saunas who are closeted and, you know, who are married. And, you know, someone will actually tell me, it's like, oh, I've got, like, a wife and two kids and I'll be so casual about it. And it's like, this is the only place they can go to feel fine. And I'm not saying that I did this with the man who was married. Never would never say that, but I did. There was one man who I remember saying, I need to do this so I can go home and be with my wife. Like, those are these exact words, and that stuck with me for so long, because I'm like, that is the level you get to in your internalized shame, where you've really, and it kind of comes back to the PNP thing as well, like, you really kind of normalize that as part of your lifestyle, and you really get into your head about it, and that becomes just something you're doing casually, that sort of thing.
Sure.
My personal set of morals with that is that I'm more than happy to have sex with, you know, a man in a heterosexual relationship, whether he be married, kids, whatever. However, if a man who, you know, identifies as being gay is in a, you know, homosexual relationship but is monogamous but still sleeping around, I personally will not engage with that. And I, you know, I feel that that's because they aren't being honest with who they are, in the sense that, you know, they're already open, but they're, you know, there's risky behaviors, yeah, that they're...
Well, that's like their trust issues with each other. That,
yeah, he's, yeah.
Like, you don't have to worry about that. Like, that's not anything to do with you. Like, if you know,
oh,
that,
oh yeah, then, I, yeah, I know that. Like, but, you know, I just personally think, you know, like, it's my own morals. Whereas I feel with, you know, heterosexual couples, there's a gray area that, you know, like, I'm more understanding and accepting of that.
There's also a massive area that we haven't, like, really touched on, and I think is important, is the sort of kink aspect of it. Because, like, there's lots of heterosexuals and homosexual-like partnerships that maybe one partner is into kink and fetish and that kind of thing, and the other partner isn't. So that will possibly be a reason for an open relationship. And that's another place that sex on premises venues come into play. Like, a lot of people don't have those facilities at home, don't have the sort of means to follow through with that kind of thing in, like, their normal day-to-day sort of experience. So,
and do you think that gay men who do engage in kink or fetish play when it comes to sex face more, I guess, slut shaming or stigma?
Definitely.
Yeah, 100%. Like,
sorry, that's a rhetorical question, but
no, it's an important question to ask, because, you know, a lot of people probably have at some point or another said something that is kink shaming. Like, there's such a massive wide world out there of things that, you know, it might not be your cup of tea, but it's my shot of whiskey. Like,
yeah.
Fine. And everyone's more than happy to shame everyone else's practices without, you know, acknowledging their own.
I kink shame Steve maybe once a day, so, you know, that's...
That's just general practice, though.
I was out last night, and a group of people I was with found a video online of someone being fisted upstairs at a bar here in Melbourne.
It wasn't meant to be released, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Well, that was the thing, and they were actually asking, they were like, do you know who this guy is?
What?
And, like, because they were trying to, like, oh, do you recognize that tattoo? I want to know who it is. And I was like, why does it matter? Like, you found the video. You were obviously searching for that. So, like, why are you...
So interested in someone else's sex life.
Yeah.
But often that's actually sort of because of the stigma that surrounds it. Somebody might actually hide their interest in a kink in a form of in appearing to be shaming it, but actually being like, who's that person? And then looking them up. That's how so many people find me. Like, I put myself out there as interested in kink, and people will try and find a way to communicate with me, like by like, you know, pigeon or something, a smoke signal, and then finding me in like a secretive way like that, instead of, because they don't feel, you know, brave enough to sort of come out.
And it's always, oh, you're into that kink. I'm into that, but tell me more about it.
Yeah, exactly. Wink, wink. Yeah.
They always want to know more. Yeah. And like, it's like, explain to me why this makes you feel that way. And it's like,
I'm with you, okay, calm down.
Yeah, like, I can't explain to you every single way that this is important to me. It just feels good.
Well, I think we've just scraped the surface here at Hide and Seek. And thank you guys for joining us tonight. It has been a pleasure. And guys, a big thank you to David for putting together our podcast. Don't forget, Hide and Seek is available on podcast at joy.org.au/hide-and-seek. We are going to bid you farewell.
We could just keep going all night. We're doing time out hands here. Like, we want to keep going, but
my
we must
hands are like
stop.
This, and I need to cut my nails because it hurts. Thanks for joining us. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Signing off. Thanks again, guys, for your company tonight.
Good night, guys.
Thank you.
Dream of me.
Don't forget, it's time for you to tell our boss that you love Hide and Seek by filling out the Joy Listener Survey at joy.org.au, and tell the world by giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.